Welcome to the Crosslands Church podcast. Our mission, to help you experience the life with God you've been missing. And now, a message for you.
What do you do? Like, what do you do? I was at a men's event once, and I asked that question. I asked everybody to stand up and introduce themselves and tell the person next to you what you do. And I'm not going to do that this morning. Nobody wants to do that here, I don't think. But almost invariably, mostly I think because they're men, I told them, tell them who you are, and they would tell them their name. And then answering the question, tell them what you do, they would give their job. I mean, we do a lot of things, but that's how we tend to answer that question. I think women less than men. So for me, what do? I'm a pastor. You know what? I'm also a husband. I'm also a father. I also waste time, watch Netflix, play guitar. You know, I do a lot of things. But we tend to see that in terms of, what is your job? And it's a real struggle for people that maybe are between work, and they go, I don't do anything. Really? Is all you are your job? Here's another question for you. If you could do anything whatsoever, you could do anything at all, what would you do? People have all kinds of answers for that. Some people go, I'd like to travel. I'd like to learn Spanish. I'd like to go skydiving. I want to accumulate stuff. We call that shopping. There's all these things that we want to do, and we can't always do it. Sometimes there's things that we think we want to do. We don't really want to do them. I have a friend that told me about 25 years ago, he said, I'd really like to learn how to play the piano. And about 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, he said to me, I'd really like to learn how to play the piano. And I said, if you really want to, like, you've had 20 years. If you really wanted to do that, you would have done it by now. But there are things that we don't really want to do, or things that grab our attention. You know, there are people that don't really want to waste their life playing video games, but they feel compelled to do that. It sucks them in. And there are things that we think we want to do, but we don't because we have other priorities. At a certain level, there's things that we could do, things we might want to do, and why aren't we actually doing it? Because we don't really have the time or the money. That's why we work. We work because if you don't work, well, good luck with that, right? You might end up starving. You have to work. This morning, we're talking, as you saw in the video, a little bit about work-life balance. And I want to give a welcome to everybody here. It is an open house service, so maybe you were invited by a friend. Maybe you were blackmailed or coerced or bribed. That's fine, whatever. We're happy to have you here anyway. We do have on our in-house website app kind of thing, crosslands.live. If you go to it on your smart device, there's all of our announcements and stuff, information about us, but there's also there's a box that says Sunday message, and there's a relevant passage from the Bible that's there for that, as well as application questions. We provide that as a resource. You know, we've heard a bunch of stuff. How do I apply it on a Monday to Saturday? And people use this for conversation over lunch or in a small group or with family or whatever. And you know, in the first service, I announced that we would take text messages. We do that normally. My number is on the screen. You can text me if you have a comment or question relevant to the message. If we have time, we'll deal with those. I didn't get any this morning, so people were either just enraptured or disengaged. I don't know, but whatever. My number's on the screen. You can text me if you want. If we have time, we'll deal with that. I do want to start this morning with a passage from the Bible. It's the words of Jesus. And here we are in 2019 as a community of followers of Jesus, which to some people seems quaint or obsolete or irrelevant or whatever, but we take what he says seriously because he's kind of the center of our identity here as this community. And he says this in, it's the book of Luke, chapter 9. It says, verse 24, 25, if you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, you will save it. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but are yourself lost or destroyed? That's a paradoxical statement, right? You try to save your life, you lose it. If you give up your life for me, you'll save it. And what does that have to do with work-life balance or whatever? There's a story of an intern that was working at a big corporation. He's working in an office, and you know, hopefully, you know, this would lead to a job. And so he's trying to work hard, trying to impress, and the CEO came by, and he was standing in front of the shredder with a piece of paper looking confused. You know, like, you have the guy that's in charge of everything, but he doesn't know how the basics run. And so the intern jumped to his aid, you know, wants to impress, and he says, you know, can I help you with that? And the CEO said, I'm not sure how this works. So he goes, oh, it's easy. He turns it on, takes the page, and shoves it in, and the CEO said, that's great, thank you. I just need 5 copies. I was thinking, asking myself this question. How long is 7.9 seconds? Apparently in the NBA semifinals, it's about 15 minutes. But you know, I used to ask that kind of question when I was sitting in math class. It was interminable. It would go on forever. And it was almost like it was sucking the soul or the life out of me. I read that passage, right? And it says, if you try to hang on to your life, more traditional translations would say soul. And it's a little bit misleading because we don't understand what that word really means in the original. It's not like there's some kind of ghost that's living in our body that's us. The idea is actually life is a very good translation because it's the whole you, the personality, the essence of who you are. And there's something about April, Wednesday afternoon calculus that just sucks that life out of you. It sucks out of you. And I remember being in school, you know, kind of thinking, you know, one day I will never have to do this again. I will never be in a situation where the life will be sucked out of me because I'm doing something I don't want to do. Then I found myself working in a factory, cutting plastic. Big string of plastic, put it in the machine, press a button, take the piece, move over here. Press the button, move over here, and 7.9 seconds was an eternity. I'm there again. It wasn't actually so bad, I'll be really honest, because it's the last time in my life I had every evening off. But I had a friend of mine that actually got me that job, and I knew I was only going to be doing that job for 3 months. There's an end date. He had worked there for over 2 years, and he had no idea how much longer he would have to work there, because you need a job. And he hated it. He absolutely hated that job. It was like sucking the life right out of them. And yet we give ourselves to these jobs. Have you ever been in one of those soul-sucking experiences, sucking the life out of you? There's all kinds of versions of that. There's a job where you're stuck in tedium, doing the same thing over and over. Or you're stuck in a job where there's office politics. You're stuck in a job with high pressure. Whatever effort you expend just seems to be met with thanklessness. Nobody seems to care. Just do your job. Show up, and show up on time. And you put your time in and you go home. We work to live, but sometimes we end up pouring our lives into our work, and there's not much left afterwards. It's costing us our soul. Sometimes we try to solve the problem with a new job, right? I'll just need a different job. I just need a better job. And then you find the same or worse problems there, and sometimes the problems are problems you bring with you. There's a sense that you're at work and it's out of your control. I'm working for somebody that's telling me what to do. Some people think the answer is you start your own business and nobody's telling you what you do. I was having a conversation with somebody a few years ago at the coffee thing, the information desk, and he said to me, man, if I had my own company, I'd be spending every afternoon on the golf green. And I thought, like, that's why you don't have your own company. It doesn't work that way. People that own their own business, man, they're running all the time. And maybe you don't have a boss, maybe you're your own boss. You still have deadlines. You still have to meet the expectations of customers or shareholders or whatever. And that's sometimes even more difficult than punching a card and going home. And then you work and work and work, and one day you retire, and what do you have left? Well, now you can do all the things you want to do, but you're too tired to do it, right? Now you have the time, maybe you have the money, and you don't have the energy. So we have these important things in life. And when people talk about work-life balance, it's almost like there's all these things we have that are important to us. So it's kind of like this, right? So here's life, here's work, and you have like, you know, important relationships that are in here, and you have your hobbies, and you have your kids. It's small because they're kids, and I hope your priorities aren't that small for your kids. And then you have work, this big one, right? And you go, okay, so there's weight here, and how do I balance that off? If you get 8 hours sleep at night, if you get 8 hours sleep at night, that means in 1 week you have 112 waking hours. And that means that most people that work at least 40 hours a week are spending at least 35% of their waking life at work, working for somebody else or working for money, working to pay the bills. Over 35% of your life, that's over a third of your waking time, working. Some people love their jobs. Some people absolutely hate the job. And I'll point out that does not even include the commute. Talk about soul-sucking. Driving that 404, brutal. And then what you do is you work and work and work, and then you have your in-between time that we fill sometimes with pastimes, things to pass the time. Is that it? That's life? Here's the problem with that. See, for good or bad, work is part of our life, and when we say we balance life and work, what we're saying is that work is not life. It's the time that you it's the place you go to die temporarily. Right? It's not part of my life. I balance my life and my work. I balance my life and the not life. Whereas this work belongs in life. How do we do that? Yeah, I know. I have a hard problem fitting life into life. How do we make that work? Jeff Bezos is the CEO of Amazon. At this point, he's the richest man in the world. Not sure how long that'll last because those things change, they fluctuate. But a couple of years ago, somebody was asking about work-life balance. It was in 2017. He did an interview. He said, I don't believe in work-life balance. I believe in work-life harmony. So when I'm effective and energetic at home, it helps me at work. And when I'm effective and energetic at work, it actually makes me a better husband. It makes me a better father and all of that. And last month, his divorce was finalized. So I'm not sure how that worked for him. I think there's a solution that goes beyond this integration thing. And the solution is understanding that regardless of what you do, regardless of who your boss is, whether it's yourself or somebody else or customers or shareholders, regardless of whether you like your job or hate it, you have a bigger call on your life. There's a word that comes from the root for call. It's the same root that vocal comes from, and that word is vocation. We all have a vocation, and some people go, yeah, some people do and some people don't. We get the sense that a vocation is something that certain people do that they don't get paid enough for, like pastors, right? Well, you think like Michelle going to Japan, right? People don't do that. Or teachers. Maybe there are people that think that teachers are overpaid. And I know teachers going, man, I wouldn't want to do that job these days with all the expectations they have on them. You have to have that's got to be a vocation for any poor sucker to subject themselves to that. There's other people that, well, it's obviously not a vocation because they get paid a lot of money. Doctors, it's not a vocation. They're just doing it for the money. Well, some might be. But some doctors really do it as a vocation. This is a calling. I'm not here just to make money. I'm here to help people. They really do. Sometimes in the course of the job, that well-intentioned motivation gets sucked out of them. Try to save your life, you lose it. But I believe that, and as a follower of Jesus, okay, because this is who we are here, that we are answerable to, and we can live for something that's bigger than you. It's bigger than your paycheck. It's bigger than your boss. It's bigger than your tasks. It's bigger than your pastimes, and it's bigger than the bills you need to pay. That's vocation. We are all called to something. Maybe your work isn't your dream job. I've said this for a few years. If you're working in your dream, good on you. If you're not working in your dream, then you're working to fund your dream. You have something you want to do, and you got to pay the bills. But see, your calling, your vocation, is not always about your job, but it's still in your job. Whatever you do, love it or hate it, you have a vocation that goes beyond what your boss tells you have to do. It's bigger than what your customers or your board members or shareholders are telling you. You have an opportunity and a calling and a meaning and a purpose in your job, regardless of what your job description is. That's what vocation is. That's the better way. See, if you give your life to God, you're not going to lose it, you're going to gain it. That's what that paradox is all about. So we work to pursue stability and things and progress and vacations, and if we pour our life into that, we will lose it. But if we give our life to the agenda that God has for us, you will find it. You will find meaning and purpose even in the worst job. I heard a story about a man who was walking along and he walked by an area where people were cutting stone. And he was kind of curious, so he went up to the first guy, and the first guy just looked miserable. And he said to the guy, you know, what are you doing? The guy said, I'm hammering this stupid rock. Can't wait till 5 o'clock when I can go home. The next guy seemed like he was a little bit more into his work, and he said, what are you doing here? The guy says, I am working to support my family. I'm working this job here. I'm cutting this rock so I can earn a paycheck and support my family. And there was a third guy that was seemed even more cheerful than that. And he went up to him and he says, what are you doing here? And the guy says, I am building a cathedral. You see the difference in perspective there. What are you doing? Your work can be worth it when you recognize your vocation. It's not just about your paycheck. It's about a calling. There's a video I want to show, and it's somebody that has worked in what many people in this country would consider a dream job, and it wasn't working for him until he recognized what was missing and how to correct that. And let's just play that video.
I'd get the question, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it was an NHL hockey player. That's all I wanted to do. I remember just the anticipation. I loved to compete. I loved the speed of it. I loved to score. Grew up in Peterborough, Ontario. Peterborough was a hockey town, so it was filled with hockey rinks, balancing that with school and church and family. You know, hockey is stats related, performance based, and that kind of, I think, carried over as a kid into just trying to be a good kid. At 6 years old, I was about to go to school, and I asked my mom if I could ask the Lord into my heart, and I still remember where, and on my knees, and prayed with my mom. At six, it's, I don't know if you really understand everything. You definitely don't, but it's definitely a start. I left home at 17. I was drafted into the Ontario Hockey League, so I went away at 17 and left family and friends and security of, you know, kind of home church. And I was playing with 16, 17, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, and I struggled. Trying too much to maybe fit in, and I was focusing for so long on what I can't do. I can't swear, I can't drink, can't have sex, can't do all these things. Meanwhile, inside, I'm not focusing on that relationship. It was hockey took over. At 19, I make it to the NHL. I'm making a great salary. I made it. Made my childhood dream, and everything was great on the exterior, interior. Not good at all. Yeah, I remember signing my first contract. I was 19 years old. Just kind of a little bit unbelievable. You know, that should have been, that's every kid's dream, is to sign a contract. And I remember going out that night to a bar, getting drunk, making bad decision, and waking up the next morning feeling like the worst piece of crap that I could ever feel like. There's a lot of inside feelings of a lot of different things. I was letting people down. I was letting God down. Trying to hide. Trying to pretend like everything was great. Still go to church, but maybe be hungover. Not really into it, but just putting up a kind of a facade. When I did a Bible study with my cousin, who I was living with at the time, at the age of about 22, I get to a scripture. It's Luke 9, 23 to 25. And it says, if you want to be a follower of me, you have to put aside your own selfish desires, shoulder your cross daily, and follow me. If you try to keep your life for yourself, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for me, you will find true life. What do you benefit if you gain the whole world but lose your own soul in the process? I remember that scripture just kind of hitting me, and that was for me. because I'd reached my dreams. I had money and everything he thought was cool and just wasn't working, and I knew the answer, but I hadn't been looking for it in the right places. And through a process of just praying and getting in the Word with my cousin, my life was changed. And for the first time, I remember thinking, man, this is really real. It wasn't because of my parents. It wasn't because I was supposed to be in church, but it became real to me, and didn't happen overnight, but slowly God changed me on the inside, and I started to not worry about the don'ts, but just focus on just pursuing Him. And slowly God started to just bring up stuff, started to confess things in my life that I wasn't proud of, and slowly God just kind of released that. It wasn't religion anymore, it was a real relationship. That was awesome. Game day, I still get goosebumps. Thankful to be able to do what I love to do. I fail. Definitely, I'm on the back end of my career. I'm a guy that's kind of not very patient at times, and I'm a slow healer. But I finally figured out that it wasn't just about performing. It's just accepting His love. In spite of our failures and our mistakes, that love of the Father is unconditional. And that's a pretty good feeling to know that how much He loves me. My name is Mike Fisher, and I am second.
You hold on to life, and you lose it, but you give it, and then you find it. Ultimately, it's not about you, but the purpose that God has for you. Now, I think for each one of us, we face the question, you know, why does this matter? I'm going to ask that you would stand this morning. You can, it doesn't matter what you do, if you're flipping burgers, or if you're working for the NBA, pursuing a championship. There's a higher agenda. There's more. Whatever the short-term goals are that are being foisted upon you or that you have for yourself, they will be gone at a certain point, and what's past that. But God's agenda doesn't. So we have a choice. We can continue to pour our lives into work willingly or unwillingly. Watch our life tick away until we can do what we really want, if we know what that even is. Or we can experience the purpose and meaning that goes beyond that of our boss, of our clients or partners, etc. An agenda, an assignment that comes from the God who loves you unconditionally. Imagine starting every day before you get to work and asking the God who loves you, what's your assignment for me today? Regardless of what the expectations of other people are, there's a purpose for you. I'm going to ask you today, if you're here today and you want to accept God's daily assignment for you in your job, just raise your hand. I want to live His agenda for me rather than my own agenda or somebody else's agenda. You can put your hands down. Maybe you're here today and this is new for you. You've never heard about it this way before. But God has a whole life agenda for you. Maybe you've never offered that trust or allegiance to him in response to his allegiance towards you. And it's quite simple. It's as simple as saying yes to him. Acknowledging what you have right now just isn't enough. We work to pursue and to earn and to fill our lives with experiences and things, and it never fills that hollow spot inside, but relationship with God fills that hollow spot inside, beyond your imagination. That the God who loves you has a purpose for your life that goes beyond your imagination. So if you want to trust him for the first time, how do you do that? It's acknowledge there's not enough without him, and then believe that he has something for you. This is made possible through following Jesus. Jesus has made a way for you to have a relationship with the God who loves you, and then start stepping towards that. Commit to the life that he has for you. Become part of a community like this, of followers of Jesus. It's all we are. It's a bunch of people. Nobody here is perfect. We're a whole bunch of people that are striving to follow Jesus together and live that out together, loving one another and learning to love our community, because that's God's intention and all the ways that that is manifested and lived out. Start reading a Bible. If you don't have one, if you don't have one that's easy to read, okay? If you have one of those old like family Bibles, all the these and thous, you go like, I can't even get that. You know, find one that's easy to read. We have them here. If you want to make that decision today and you go, I don't have a Bible that's easy to read, go to the information desk and they'll give you one. You know, we sell them for $10. If you don't want to pay $10, they'll just give you one. I don't care. And we have a thing on our crossings.live, follow Jesus. This is the start of a whole new spiritual journey. It's a whole new life that you've never experienced before. If you go onto crossings.live and click follow Jesus, give us your contact information, we'll help you with that, living it out. It's something that we do together. None of us can live this out on our own. Now, we're going to close the service in a minute. And immediately following the service, we turn this room into a prayer room. And there are people here that need to engage with God in a safe space. That's what this is, safe space. And so we have, Pastor Wade is creating an atmosphere by which this can happen. Just spend some time engaging with God. Ask him to reveal his agenda, his assignment for you. Just spend some time with him. You can do this in a group, with another person, by yourself, whatever. It doesn't matter. We always ask everyone to find one person you've never met before, have a meaningful conversation with them, because we want to be a place where people can belong, can engage, you can make friends here. We just ask that you have those conversations in the lobby so that this can be that kind of safe prayer space with that atmosphere. And finally, I'm going to pray for you before, as a kind of the final thing. But if you're here for the first time, you know, dragged by a friend or whatever, I'd love to invite you to come back. And maybe you don't agree with everything that was said. Maybe you're still processing this. Maybe you don't even like listening to me. But that's fine. You're still welcome back. You know, I'm pretty happy to have you back. Because that's what we're here for. So we're every Sunday morning. We have an early service and a late service. I'd love to have you back in our service here. So let me pray for you. Father, I thank you so much that you love each one of us completely and unconditionally. That you made us to love us. There's nothing we have to do to earn your love. But that you also have a life for us that is better than what we are living. That as much as nobody goes to their grave wishing they'd spent more time at work, as much as the people that we're working for don't always have our best interests at heart, they have other agendas, you do have our best interests at heart. You've made us to love us. You've made us for purpose. You've made us for relationship with you. That you've called us into a loving family. You've called us to have significant impact in the world. Father, I pray for each one of us today that we would look for, listen for, and hold on to the agenda that you have for us, even in our jobs that we might love or hate. That you might have a daily assignment for us. Help us to tune our ears to you and ask you, before somebody else is telling us what to do, what do you have for us to do today? In what ways do you want us to experience your love today? In what ways do you want us to demonstrate your love for others today? Father, I pray that you would make that increasingly our reality. I ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen.
You've been listening to the Crosslands Church podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or the Google Play Store so that it comes straight to your device. And to find out more about Crosslands Church, you can visit us at crosslands.ca. Join us next week for another message to help you experience the life with God you've been missing.